I'm the dude. So that's what you call me.
Are you a virgin?
Yeah, not since I was 10.
Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret.
Come out to the coast. We get together, have a few laughs.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
Can I return it if it doesn't fit?
It always fits. Eventually.
Welcome back to Movie Mingle. I'm Caveman.
And I'm Maggie.
And today, episode 61, Maggie and I watched Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. Scott Pilgrim was 2010. Edgar Wright directed it, director of Spaced, TV show that Maggie and I had a lot of fun watching.
I enjoyed Spaced very much. I believe I brought it to you because we were both fans of Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz. And I went, hey, look. The people that did Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz made a TV show, and I bought it for $30, the entire series.
It was a lot of fun.
Let's watch it together.
It was a fun little show.
It is a very fun little show.
Nick Frost and Simon Pegg are charming in it.
My second favorite thing that the group of them have done behind Hot Fuzz.
Yeah, Edgar Wright can be a fun director. I think his strongest movies were definitely Shaun of the Dead, and
his strongest movies were definitely the movies that he has done with Simon Pegg and Nick Frost.
Well, and specifically, I was going to say Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz.
Yes.
Specifically, because World's End.
World's End is...
It was, some people like it, some people don't.
You know, it's been so long since I've seen it. I didn't really like it when I saw it. I think I walked out of the theater going, huh.
It was definitely very different from the other
two. Very
different,
yeah. I don't necessarily like the way that they took that story, because it was so different from...
Well, and Simon Pegg in that one. Simon Pegg is very fun and charming in the other two.
Yeah, and then whereas this one,
he's an asshole.
Yeah, and they swapped it up to make Nick Frost kind of the charming one.
The charming
one.
Hero.
And I don't buy that?
No, because we want our... You know, you did it twice. Now for the third one.
It's not even that they've done it twice. They've done it three times, four if you count Paul, even though Nick Frost was not a part of Paul.
Edgar Wright was not a part of Paul.
Yeah, excuse me. Edgar Wright was not a part of Paul. But still, the trope was always... It's like if they swapped up Abbott and Costello or Laurel and Hardy and made the smart one dumb and the dumb one smart. Right. And I'm not saying that Nick Frost and Simon Pegg are the smart one and the dumb one, but they definitely have their own versions of like that trope, right?
Yeah.
Nick Frost is usually the louder one, the obnoxious one, the over the top one, and Simon Pegg is usually the calm straight man.
More of the straight man compared to Nick Frost,
yes,
for sure.
And they swapped that at World's End, and it's not believable.
It didn't work the same way.
It did not.
And Simon Pegg playing an asshole is kind of disappointing.
It is, like almost a little bit.
Almost
yeah.
like your child is like, oh.
Yeah,
like,
it's
I'm not angry
like,
at you, but I'm a little disappointed.
Yeah, I'm kind of like, oh, well, you know.
We'll get him next time, Tiger.
Yeah, this wasn't your best showing,
no.
buddy. And I don't think that I'm alone in that, because I think renownedly at World's End is the least favorite
and
across the board.
And I believe that his trilogy, that trilogy, is at least at a higher level than what I would say people have enjoyed when it comes to Baby Driver and
Last
Night in Soho. Well,
yeah, I'd still rather watch any of those movies than watch any of his non-Nick Frost.
He's essentially got two trilogies that you can think of.
Yeah.
You've got that Coronado trilogy,
uh-huh.
and then you've got the Last Night in Soho, Baby Driver, and Scott Pilgrim. Those are like...
I didn't see Last Night in Soho, which is enough for me to be like, yeah, I probably wouldn't.
The Simon Pegg and Nick Frost stuff is just so strong.
Yeah, it is.
And even with that third movie.
Well, yeah, but then they also had Spaced. They've got four up on the other ones.
Right.
You've got Spaced, you've got Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and At World's End, right? And then Paul, which even though it was not directed or written by Edgar Wright, kind of has an Edgar Wright stank on it. This isn't what the movie we're talking about now is not Edgar Wright's best stuff, and it's still pretty great. I enjoy Scott Pilgrim more than I enjoy Baby Driver because it's more Edgar Wright. You know what I mean? The music, the visuals, the graphics, the cinematography, all of the movie making aspects of this film are pretty great and very Edgar Wright. It's the story where it falls flat for me, and if I'm allowed to, we'll get into that.
Well, it was written by Brian Lee O'Malley originally in his graphic novel, Scott Pilgrim. He's been an illustrator since the early 2000s and then a writer into the late 2000s, but is mostly known for Scott Pilgrim. I don't know much more about that. I've never read any of those comics. I watched the first episode of the Netflix series. I enjoyed what I had seen from that first episode. I found it intriguing, but I didn't watch anything past it. I want to, but, you know, sometimes you just don't have the time. I think what I liked most about this movie when it came out was, I think the comedy was what I think a lot of my friends and I enjoyed about it. I thought it was witty, and the combination of video game and comic book on the screen, it was very, hadn't seen something like that.
It was very unique when it came out.
Very unique.
And Edgar Wright did a great fucking job with, like, the video game aspect of this film.
I think Michael Cera was just coming off of
Arrested Development. Yep.
So that's, I think, what I knew him most from. So it was also fun just seeing him in something different than Arrested Development. When you first watched, what did you think of this movie when you first watched it?
I don't remember the exact feelings that I had the very first time I ever saw this film. I think that I found it amusing and pretty and shiny and fun because Edgar Wright does such a good job filming this film. I don't think I ever felt anything for any of the characters because they're all kind of terrible. And, you know, I just, when people would talk to me about this movie before I rewatched it for this podcast, I'd always be like, oh, yeah, that's a fun one. You know, it was never at the top of my Edgar Wright list. It was never at the bottom of my Edgar Wright list. It was just a movie that existed. And that, you know, as years passed, it was more about like, oh, isn't it funny that Chris Evans and Brie Larson are in this film? And, oh my God, look at this stacked cast of, like, modern great actors. And this is them when they were all sweet, tiny babies.
A lot of future superheroes.
Yeah. And isn't it funny to see, you know, Audrey Plaza as anybody other than April Ludgate from Parks and Rec? Like, I don't know. This movie was just shiny pretty for me, and I didn't hold too many deep emotions for it. Having rewatched it, my opinions have changed somewhat. But, you know, not everything holds up well.
The music for Scott Pilgrim was done by Nigel Godrich. He was the sound engineer for Radiohead on some of their EPs in the beginning, and worked on their second album as a sound engineer.
Was that the Bends?
Yes, for the Bends. And then he has been their record producer since their third album, OK Computer. From OK Computer on, he has been their producer. Other than Scott Pilgrim, he has worked on two short films. One called The Grand Attack, essentially in English. It's a French film. And then the other short film, Anima, by Paul Thomas Anderson and Tom York. So, of course, he helped work on the music for that.
I can't say I've thought much about the music in Scott Pilgrim. That was not, like, Needle Drops or Sex Bob-omb's own stuff.
Right.
But I do like the Bends, OK Computer, and Kid A a whole lot.
I think there was a lot of, like, so, just electronic music in general was a lot of it. A lot of the music that was written for the movie was either done by him or Beck.
And of course, Jesus. Like, Hans Zimmer was not going to compose Scott Pilgrim versus the World. You know, Edgar Wright was going to go out and find the hipsteriest music that he could and find, you know, the most obscure random musician to do the original soundtrack. Like, of course.
Of course.
Like, this is all very on brand for what this film is.
Cinematography was done by Bill Pope. And, you know, we've talked about Bill Pope before because, of course, it's the same cinematographer that Edgar Wright used for Baby Driver. So he's done things like Army of Darkness, Clueless, The Matrix Trilogy, Bedazzled, Spider-Man 2 and 3, Men in Black 3, Jon Favreau's Jungle Book, Alita Battle Angel.
So some hits and some serious misses.
Yeah, Shang-Chi, which was a hit, but then Quantumania, which we were like, eh. And Jerry Seinfeld's Unfrosted. Woof.
Scott, I mean, the cinematography for this film is one of the things I like about this film.
Something new that I'm doing for how a movie was done or received critically is take from a few different sources and find out what the average is. So on Rotten Tomatoes, we have 83% from critics, 84% from audiences. Letterboxd gave it a 3.9 out of 5. Metascore, 69. Nice. And... and a 7.5 out of 10 on IMDb, which brings it to an average of 77.8. So it's a high C. High C is delicious.
Some orange drink. Lava burst high C right now that you can only get at McDonald's, which is one of the few reasons to actually go to McDonald's. High C.
It's a very just average film as far as what everybody has thought of it over the years. And I think that perception has definitely changed.
I was going to say, it's very average until you decide you dislike it, and then everybody jumps down your fucking throat demanding to know why.
You know, some people just want to know why the movie they enjoyed at one moment in time is no longer, they're no longer able to watch it. And sometimes it's hard to keep track of, am I allowed to watch this movie now? Or do I have to... you know, run it by a committee first.
Nobody is saying that people can't like this movie these days. I think that what other people are saying is, why can't they dislike it?
You can like and dislike whatever you want. Yeah. But sometimes other people like to know why other people like and, or dislike things.
And why is the reason? Because I don't. Not good enough for some people.
I think we know who other people and some people are.
Yeah, yeah. And so do our children and our neighbors. We finally done it. A movie here at Movie Mingle has broken up our relationship.
We're getting a divorce. We're
getting
a
divorce. It is over.
Scott Pilgrim has broken us.
I will see you in hell, Michael Cera.
Scott Pilgrim was made for $85 million bucks.
In 2000, I mean, yeah. Yeah, I was re-listening to our Once Upon a Time in Hollywood episode the other day because I'm on my Timothy Olyphant bullshit and I have no regrets about that.
Which I still haven't asked you about. What started that?
You know, that's a conversation for a private off-air time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Timothy Olyphant in porn now?
No. Damn. God, I wish.
All right, me too.
Oh, he's got that. Anyways, I was re-listening to that episode and you talked about how that movie was only made for like $90-95 million, which... I was, like, impressed by in, what, like, 2017-18 when it came out? 2019, I think, when it came out. So, the fact that this movie cost just a little bit less than that, but in 2010, makes sense. There is a lot of special effects.
There are.
On the thrown at this fucking screen. It is...
special effect heavy.
Yeah, it is spaghetti thrown against the wall. And it's not that none of it holds up. It's actually pretty legit special effects still.
It's fun.
But... like,
the coins, the...
No. It's all great.
The points.
The swords, all of it. It's the all lights really that fun. He picks up. No, it's it's really, really good. It would cost a lot more if it were made today.
Oh, sure.
Which is probably why they... I mean, it's definitely why they animated the last round.
Just for inflation.
But, yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah.
However, unfortunately for
Scott Pilgrim. Not a big one.
No, it made $34 million domestically, which no matter what happens after that, no matter how much it makes internationally, no matter how much it makes on home video, the fact that it made less than half of the budget is so bad.
Yeah, that's pretty rough.
But at the same time...
that's one of our lowest producing movies.
That's the thing, though, is Edgar Wright at the time... like, because he had done, I believe, Hot Fuzz was already made.
Yeah, Hot Fuzz had come out, yeah.
But not in World's End quite yet.
Yeah.
So, we've talked about this before, how a director can get a small budget film done, it's a big success. They get another small budget film done, it's a big success, which we've had, like, Ari Aster, or, you know, and now with Edgar Wright, and then they're like... All right, here's a little bit more money, and now you get to do whatever you want.
Hollywood is renowned at allowing certain people to fail up.
Yes, absolutely.
Hollywood is
a lot of people failing up.
Great at allowing it's straight women
to a point
to fail up.
To a point, it depends on how big of a loss you give them. Yeah. Like, there are actors that we know that we've talked about where we're like, Hollywood really tried to make this guy a leading man, and then we never hear about him again.
When they have the charisma of a drunk ant, and by ant I mean like the bug that crawls around.
It seems like they get like
they get five chances, and then they slowly disappear. Unless they are in any way an ethnic minority, and then they disappear a lot faster. A guy from who played Jacob in Twilight, you know, he was given like three chances.
But Tyler Kitsch,
the guy who played Cyborg was given like two shots, and then one of the worst directors in Hollywood and worst people in Hollywood killed his career while killing his own career.
Yes. Two careers killed in one song.
Joss Whedon will come back, and I guarantee goddamn to you the guy who played Cyborg never will. I'm just saying that, you know, when you look at the people who are allowed to fail up, they all tend to...
Oh, they're very different. They're very specific type of
similar
person.
Yes. That being said, I enjoy Edgar Wright a lot as a person and a human being, and I can't say why Scott Pilgrim didn't do better. But it obviously did enough.
Pretty niche.
To become a cult classic.
Like, at least Edgar Wright's first two films that he did with Simon Pegg and...
They were smaller films that made a lot of money.
And they were British films. And they did very well in Britain.
That's kind of what I think might be the problem.
I think Edgar Wright's a great British director.
And I don't think he should step out, because I don't know what Last Night in Soho did in England, but it did not do well here. And that was a very British movie with a very British cast.
Like I said, there are certain directors that you give them a small budget.
Yeah, and they can do great things.
And they can do great things. And I would love to see another...
With the people that they love who love them.
I would love to see another Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, Edgar Wright film that's like less than $50 million. And I bet they could make absolute gold.
I mean, for what it's worth, like, Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright are in the early stages of developing a new film.
With who?
Just that they are.
Well, of
there
course.
Is they nothing will always, specific.
The two of them will always be developing a new film in the future.
And, I mean, even back so far as, like, last July in 2024, they were like, could the Cornetto trilogy become a quadrilogy? Like, you never kind of know. But I think that if Edgar Wright went up to Simon and Nick and went... Hey, let's do something else, even if it's not a Cornetto trilogy. They would be like, fuck yeah, because we're all good friends. And then
how cool would that be?
It would be amazing.
And I can't wait.
I look forward to it. I will give it a shot.
At least show up.
I will at least show up. I will give them my money for a ticket in a theater. I will put myself towards that box office.
Well, internationally, people did not put themselves in through the box office.
Not shocked by that.
Only $18 million.
Whew!
And then $30 million on home media.
Is this our lowest grossing film for Movie Mingle? Because it feels like it's one of them.
What was the other one that we had just talked about that grossed really low?
Iron Giant?
I thought there was one on this list, though, that we were like, man, it made the list.
I don't actively remember.
It was recent.
Yeah. Nonetheless, like this is one of the woofs.
This is a big one, yeah.
Yeah.
Total of $82 million. So
it didn't even make back all the home media. Yeah, it didn't even make back its budget. That is who ref. But since then, it has become a cult classic.
It is a cult classic
and a favorite and a red flag for a particular sort of people.
Is this like Godfather and?
It might be the.
What's the other one?
Fight Club. This might be like the Godfather and the Fight Club of the young millennial, late Gen Z generation. Yes, when guys, you know, if I were a young woman out there in the dating scene and guys are like, oh my God, Scott Pilgrim's my favorite movie, I'd be like, red flag, no thank you. You will pay for this drink and I will leave.
It was nominated for 66 awards and won 18 of them.
How many of them weren't Oscars?
We all know. It didn't win a single Oscar or even nominate for one. Obviously, it's not that kind of movie. I think we can all agree. It's a fun movie, but it's not that kind of movie. It won a couple of satellite awards.
Of course it did.
Because if all else fail, bet on satellite.
You'll get a satellite award.
Best actor, Michael Cera.
Yo! I would never say that. Those words do not belong together, sir.
No, I don't think the English language has ever been put together that way. Best picture as well, they got a satellite award for.
Mm.
And then the Houston Film Critics Society Awards and International Online Cinema Awards gave Beck an award for best song, We Are Sex Ba-Bomb.
We are Sex
Ba-Bomb. You know what my favorite thing that Beck has ever done?
What's that?
Yeah, it's a Lonely Island song. It's called Fuck. It's called Fuck. No, nice. Hold on. The best thing that Beck has ever done, in my humble opinion. And I mean, I don't dislike Beck or his music. He was a Scientologist for a very long time, which, yikes. But I'm pretty sure he got out. I've enjoyed many a Beck song. But my favorite Beck song, my favorite thing Beck has ever done, is the song Attracted to Us, featuring Beck, by The Lonely Island.
White girls, you are attracted to us. Black girls, you are attracted to us.
That song is an eternal bop, and it is the one Beck song that gets played the most on my phone, which is a Lonely Island song where they sing about all the different types of girls that are attracted to them, but they're never going to get them because they're shy. Yeah, the boys are way too shy. Yeah.
That song very well. Yeah, because
I've played it 1,000,000,000,000 times.
It's always on.
Yeah, and it's a great little bop of a song. And I'm not saying that anything else that Beck has done is great or not great. I like Beck. You know, I'm an elder millennial. Beck is my childhood.
Oh, sure.
Like, that guy exploded on the scene, that video was all over MTV, and you know I watched it because I'm old enough to have watched music videos on MTV.
Wait, MTV showed music videos?
Once upon a time, yes. God. There was something called TRL, and I tuned in for it daily, even though I hated it, but I still watched it because that was what was expected of you. And maybe, just maybe, they'd play a Sarah McLachlan song. They never did. But I hoped. Oh, God, I held out hope. Anyways, I like Beck, but Attracted to Us is the best Beck song.
I do have 3 Beck albums over
there. Not surprised.
I know you're not.
Nope.
The Internet Film Critics Society also gave the movie an award for Best Experimental Film. which is what people say when they're just like, what the fuck
we
is this?
We don't know what that was.
We don't know how to categorize this.
But we liked
this.
It?
I guess it's experimental.
Okie dokie.
Because the fuck?
The fuck indeed.
Hey, Maggie, do you have a favorite Michael Cera movie?
No, I don't.
I don't think
the words
anybody does.
Favorite and Michael Cera ever in any way come together, which is sort of mean to Michael Cera, but I kind of don't
Michael
mind
Cera.
Because I think, as the Screen Junkie guys put it, he is a he has a toddler face and a long toddler body.
A stretched out toddler body.
If I had to pick something that I liked him the most in, I would probably say Barbie. Because honestly, Alan was pretty great.
I mean, he's fun in Superbad.
I haven't seen Superbad in a very long time, and I don't know if I ever want to rewatch it because I'm not sure how that one aged. Yeah. I haven't seen Juno in a very long time, but he was a piece of shit in Juno. I did enjoy George Michael.
His character was, but I think his performance was very good.
I don't remember. It's been forever.
I think as far as performances go, I think Michael Cera is good in Juno. He's fun and Superbad. One of the funniest things that I've ever seen him in was This Is the End.
Which I also haven't seen in such a long time that I don't know. I don't remember much about
it. Everybody's pretty much playing themselves.
Yeah, playing themselves, but awful versions of themselves.
But they all purposely decided to pick on Michael Cera the most. And everything they say about him is hilarious.
Yeah.
And,
because he's a giant toddler.
Yeah. And we all enjoy him for that.
Do we? I don't know. I don't feel like...
We have been. We've been celebrating him
We watched a trailer not too long ago with him in it, and I can't remember what the name of that movie was.
What was that for?
Although apparently he's supposed to be in The Running Man, the new one with Glenn Powell.
Yeah, directed by Edgar Wright.
Oh, fuck, you're right. I heard good things about Life and Beth, but I don't remember. I never watched it. I guess it's just that I don't buy Michael Cera as a human being because he's always just been a giant, walking, you know, humanoid piece of dough. He is flesh Play-Doh that is moved to become an actor in everything that I see him in except Arrested Development. That is the only thing I've ever seen him in that I found him believable because he was an awkward teenager in Arrested Development. He was an awkward teenage perv in Arrested Development.
Yeah.
And it is just, maybe that has just stuck with me until even now. But, you know, I don't dislike the guy because there's always money in the banana stand. Yeah. But, you know, I'm not like his number one, like, diehard. He is not my Oscar Isaac.
I know.
Yeah.
It was also Wes Anderson's new movie, The Phoenician Scheme.
That's it. New movie
that, and he looks interesting in that.
I mean, it's going to be a Wes Anderson movie, but how great have they been lately?
I'm there. Mary Elizabeth Winstead plays Ramona Flowers. I really enjoy Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
You know, I'm never unhappy to see her pop up into things. I think that she's very cute. I like her face.
She's amazing in 10 Cloverfield Lane.
She is married to Ewan McGregor.
Man.
Yeah, no, like, look, you're all right. Like, I will forever love and preach about the gloriousness that is Birds of Prey and the fabulous emancipation of Harley Quinn. Birds of Prey was such an underrated movie. It is so much fun. I mean, Ewan McGregor is in it with his wife. Fucking Margot Robbie is just is perfect as Harley Quinn. Like, if you even liked her a little bit in Suicide Squad, fucking Birds of Prey, she is all over it, and she is a delight. Rosie Perez, who knew she had it in her? You know, like, I fucking love Birds of Prey, and I will talk for years about what a great film that is. But Mary Elizabeth Winstead has popped up in hundreds of things.
I mean,
she is a prominent character actress.
Recently, she was Hera in Ahsoka.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, she was really good in that.
Yeah, she always.
Yeah, I'm never unhappy to see her in anything, including this. Even if her character is a manic pixie daydream girl written by a dude, like, even that, I'm still happy to see her. And she's been in some great things, and she's been in some stinkers, and I'm always happy to see her.
Kieran Culkin.
Who is having
Wallace.
A moment right now? The last couple of years have been Kieran Culkin's world.
Specifically, recently with A Real Pain,
that he won the Oscar for,
winning so many awards for.
Yeah, which you have seen that movie, and you said that it really is his film.
Oh,
correct?
Yeah. Oh yeah, he steals that movie away from everybody else in it. He's also in Succession, which is. A massive
huge.
TV show that
watch it.
I watched one episode of, I know.
Yeah.
From what I've heard, he's won awards from that show as well.
No, he won quite a few awards for that show, yeah.
And
don't forget, too, that he was in Home Alone. So he is an Oscar-winning Home Alone actor, Kieran Culkin.
Not many of those in that show, in that movie.
No.
There's a few of them.
And don't forget that in Home Alone 2, it stars Oscar winner Kieran Culkin and professional felon Donald Trump. Kieran Culkin, again, he's been in 100 things. I feel like his character in this movie is very much still kind of the character that he plays now, if that makes sense. Like, the quirky guy and the goofy guy in this particular case, he's like the stereotypical gay best friend that usually the woman gets, but they try to be subversive, quote unquote, and give it to the man in this one. But like, he's the stereotypical, like, quirky gay best friend, but he is one of the few characters in this movie that I don't hate with an unbridled passion.
No, I think he's the way the editing and the story with him
Scott's sister's boyfriend. That was quite funny.
And then
funny.
Immediately, like, making out with him. I thought that was all really funny.
No, Kieran Culkin's the best part about this film. He's also the only character that treats knives as if she were an actual human being.
And so imagine what he is in this movie. and then like dial that up a little bit, and that's who he is in A Real Pain.
I'll watch it one day, maybe. I don't know if I'll get past the Jesse Eisenberg of it all.
Trust me, it's the least offensive Jesse Eisenberg movie I've seen in a very long time.
Fair.
I think he was busier directing the film than he was acting in it.
Sort of like how when like actors like direct episodes of their TV shows, like when David Duchovny would direct an episode of The X-Files and he was barely in the one right before the one that he directs. Like, I know how this shit rolls. I've seen The Unnatural. I get it. He's barely in that one because he directed it.
Anna Kendrick. Really love Anna Kendrick.
I think she's a really just a cutie.
I wish she was in more things. I like seeing her. She was great in Pitch Perfect. Honestly, I've only seen Up in the Air once, so I don't remember.
Sorry, producer Robin decided to take my screen and send it completely off topic.
Yeah, and plus, if anybody hears extra noise in them from like anything in the background, it's probably because the cat is laying on all the wires right now.
Yep, cleaning himself. Yes, I love Anna Kendrick in Pitch Perfect. The first Pitch Perfect is a perfect comfort film for me. That movie is like 2 hours, barely 2 hours, of She's All That and several other films. It's always the exact same idea as like 8 other films, but it's delightful and it's cute, and I love the music and I love her little face. She has gone on to do a lot of really good things. I heard a lot of great stuff of Woman of the Hour that came out early this year, late last year, which was a movie that she directed about a woman who goes on a game show and ends up being paired up with a serial killer, which is loosely based on actual facts because being a woman in this world is terrifying. But I heard a lot of good things about that. She was fun in Self-Reliance, which was that movie with Jake Johnson, where he was like, I'm going to get killed in a month.
I like that movie.
Yeah, that was a fun one. Of course, she's done and will do every Trolls movie forever because that will be her pay dirt and good for her.
She has a good singing voice.
Yeah, she's got a great singing voice, and she got that Trolls money, and I hope she's investing it wisely because that will keep her going for the rest of her life.
Yeah, that and Pitch Perfect. Pitch Perfect. I'm sure there'll be a Pitch Perfect 6.
I don't know. I feel like they kind of... I mean, Pitch Perfect 3 was rough, but you never know.
A decade or two go by, they're like...
She was also in all the Twilight movies, which she was also in all of the Twilight movies.
I always forget she is.
She's the human best friend.
I've only seen the first two Twilight movies because I just can't make myself go past that. Oh, no, they're terrible.
I've only seen the first, and I won't watch any of the rest
of them. I even tried watching... I was like, okay, I can't watch these all the way through, so maybe I'll try Reactor Channels.
Couldn't even do that.
Only do like a 30-minute breakdown. They only showed like 10 minutes of footage.
Yeah.
I couldn't even do that.
No, they're
with the third and beyond. Like,
I have gone on record.
The critics that had to watch that for their job.
I have gone on record on several different internet sources to say that this Maggie fucking hates the Twilight books and movies and anything to come out of those Twilight films. I could wipe better stories than that woman could, but she's made all the money and I've done this.
Next we've got Allison Pill, who played one of the...
She's the drummer in the band. She's one of Scott's many exes.
One of Scott's exes. I... Unfortunately, I have not watched a lot of stuff with her in it.
It's funny. I've seen a lot of these movies, but I don't remember her in any of it.
I watched Trap with Josh Harnett, the newest M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Oh, is she in that?
She is in that. I believe she plays Josh Harnett's wife.
Oh, interesting.
If I remember correctly. So she's towards the end of the movie when all the tension and build-up
I just read what happened in that movie on Wikipedia. So
It's fun enough.
What a twist.
But it's not like anything great, but it's entertaining for an hour and a half, 2 hours, whatever it is. But
I have seen a lot of Allison Pill stuff and I don't remember her in any of it. I do not remember her in Snowpiercer. I do not remember her in Hail Caesar. I do not remember her.
She's the teacher in Snowpiercer.
I don't remember her in Midnight in Paris. I don't remember her in Dan in Real Life. I never saw the Goon movies. I don't remember her in Confessions of a Teenage Drama Queen.
I don't remember like, her in Hail Caesar.
Yeah, I know that she's done a lot, and she's a name that I recognize.
Well, when she's on screen, you're like, oh, Alison Pill.
When she's on screen, I go, oh, it's her. But I don't know her name.
You don't remember Alison Pill?
No, it's more of a her.
Her?
Including the fact that Mae Whitman is in this movie, and Alison Pill is still the her. Oh, her?
Aubrey Plaza's in this. Love Aubrey Plaza.
We do, yes. I mean, Parks and Rec forever. She will forever be April Ludgate.
She plays Scott's sister. Yeah,
no, she doesn't play Scott's sister. Anna Kendrick plays Scott's sister. Oh, that's right.
She just plays one of his friends.
Aubrey Plaza just plays, like, a friend, yes.
And like, loose.
Yeah.
Like, term is very loose.
She has done a lot of wacky shit. She is an incredible actress. And while I may know her from kind of a handful of, you know, things, you know, mainly Parks and Rec and Agatha All Along, I'm never unhappy to see Aubrey Plaza pop up in anything. I think she's an incredible actress. The lesbians live for her, and I'm all for it.
Oh, do they?
Oh, my God. What Agatha All Along did for the lesbians
MCU.
Oh, yeah, because that Agatha All Along was the gayest thing the MCU has ever put out, including Civil War, where Steve Rogers literally fights the entire world for his boyfriend, Bucky Barnes. Agatha is as gay as the day is long, and the main couple are Aubrey Plaza and Catherine Hahn. And the lesbians are obsessed with that relationship with both of those women. It's all over my TikTok because I've got a very specific timeline over there. But yeah, she's beloved. I know she was also in season 2 of The White Lotus. I'm pretty sure it was season 2.
Yes.
You know, she was in I heard a lot of good things about My Old Ass. I never saw The Little Hours, but the cast is phenomenal.
She was in 27 episodes of Legion.
Yeah, crazy in Legion.
Yeah.
Like, I only watched a handful of those episodes, and the episodes I saw with her, I was still like, Jesus Christ.
Legion's great. Like, I remember it came out around the same time as American Gods, so yeah. I'm watching Legion and American Gods. I think they were close to each other. Maybe not, but
she was, like, people lived for Ingrid Goes West, too, which is, again, a movie I never saw, because I don't really like the single white female stories, you know, where a female character becomes obsessed with another female character and changes their entire life to fit into them. Like, that was never really my jam of a story, but I've heard a lot of great things about Ingrid Goes West. You know, she's amazing, and by all accounts, she's a very sweet person, even though she's also very much like April Ludgate, you know, dark and sarcastic and funny. She used to be a page at the NBC studios in New York. She was a page for SNL, and apparently a terrible one at that.
The villain of our film is Jason Schwartzman.
Oh, Jason Schwartzman.
Gideon.
Yeah. Which, I mean, I don't 1,000% buy him as the villain of anything ever, but like,
This smarmy...
He's really good at being a smarmy douchebag.
Douchebag is enough, I think, for this movie.
It's hard to see Jason Schwartzman and not see the influence of Wes Anderson and like the Grand Budapest Hotel.
Yeah.
I don't dislike the guy. He's delightful. He's a Coppola. He's been in everything. He's there.
He's got a great part in Queer.
Yeah.
I didn't see that one.
He's in Walk Hard, Legend of Dewey Cox. Of course. No, he plays John Lennon. Fuck it, I forgot that.
Yep.
Oh, we were just talking today about how we needed to do selection of like subverse musicals and how Walk Hard, the Legend of Dewey Cox would definitely be a bonus episode one day.
Ellen Wong plays Knives Chow.
The only decent person in this entire film.
And they point that out, too.
Several times, yeah.
That she's the only decent person among
just
this
group of awful fucking people.
She was in Glow. Glow, if people haven't watched Glow, go watch Glow. It's so good.
Oh, yeah, that was the wrestling show on Netflix,
female wrestling show from the 80s.
Never watched it. In fact, going through her list, I've seen Silent Night. Nope. Take that back. I haven't even seen that because that's not the one I was thinking of. I have seen Scott Pilgrim and one episode of Son of Zorn. Oh, God. Ellen Wong.
You watched Son of Zorn?
I watched one episode of Son of Zorn. And that was enough for me to be like...
That was the one episode with her in it.
Was it the pilot? Knives Chow deserves 1,000 times better than what she gets in this story across the board. She is one of the reasons I dislike this film, because of how her character is treated. Because she is a pure little snowflake who, by the way, is only 17. 17. She is 17, which, by the way, is over the legal consent age of Canada, but I don't care, because when you're a 23-year-old dating a 17-year-old, you're a fucking scumbag. Knives Chow is 17. She deserves so much better than any single person she meets because of Scott Pilgrim, and I hope that she moved out of that part of Canada and went and found herself a better life away from all of these motherfuckers, because... Other than Wallace and Kieran Culkin, who treated her, he's the only one that treats her with any dignity or respect or humanity. The rest of the characters are pieces of shit to her, and she's just a sweet, naive, dumb little girl who deserves the world. So run, Knives, run! Run away from Toronto and get rid of all these evil, awful fucking people you're surrounded by.
Well, I remember being pretty surprised when he showed up on screen the first time I watched it. Kind of like, I guess, when I first watched Wolverine and Deadpool. or Devil Wolverine. Chris Evans, post...
Fucking Captain America.
Well, not quite.
Not quite.
I don't think he was there yet. He had first two Fantastic Four movies.
Yes, this was pre... Yeah, it was pre-Cap. But yes, a young Chris Evans is one of the ex-boyfriends. He is a delightful douchebag. Of course, you know Chris Evans from everything, and including the MCU, which we're not going to blow Chris Evans, although we would both like to.
Sure. We've both seen his penis.
Yeah, yes, we have. The night that his dick pic dropped on the internet was one of the funniest nights of my life. I don't think I've ever laughed harder than that night while I was at work actively discussing his penis with lots of people. I'm really sorry, Chris Evans, but it came up a lot in conversation. But yeah, Chris Evans, we love him. He's Cap. He's fucking Cap. God damn it. What else do you say about the man?
Brie Larson.
Oh my God. My other Cap. Oh, Captain, my Captain.
Ex-girlfriend.
Yes. Envy Adams, back when she was a young baby and she was more about singing than acting. I don't care what men on the internet or men in general think about Brie Larson as Captain Marvel. She is and always will be my fucking Captain. So, you know.
Suck it.
Yeah, fuck off. Because that bitch can punch a spaceship and she makes me feel like I could punch a spaceship. And I love her. I love her. And the Marvels was great and underrated. And we all know it.
Brandon Routh also in this movie.
The vegan.
Fun to see. Especially with superpowers.
Yeah, you know, it is kind of interesting that this movie has Captain America and Superman in it.
Captain America, Superman, Punisher.
Captain Marvel.
Captain Marvel.
Death from the MCU. Wait, Punisher?
One of the vegan security guys.
Oh, yeah, Thomas Jane. Thomas Jane. Yeah. I actually wrote his name down in my notes. This movie is very superhero heavy. Brandon Routh, of course, is most known for them trying to make him a thing with Superman. They tried really hard to make him a thing with Superman, and it didn't work. But he didn't let that stop him, and he's had a very good career. You know, he joined the CW as their version of Atom Man, Atom Smasher. What was his name?
Atom.
Yeah, the Atom.
Just the Atom, yeah. I think.
He was a part of the CW verse forever as the Atom. He was charming as hell. I don't know. I find him adorable.
He is adorable.
Yeah, he's got a great jaw and a cute face. And I like the vegan in this movie. Like, I like that sequence of him just being unstoppable until he accidentally drinks half and half. I find that very funny.
Wait, half and half isn't vegan?
He's very cute. And then finally, we have somebody that we talked about very recently without talking about her at all. Mae Whitman.
Her?
Who? Egg? who is most notably, I would think, known for Arrested Development. But in this live family,
action, live yes. action, yeah, the rest of development probably, but yeah.
In this family, we know her as the voice of Tinkerbell.
She plays Tinkerbell in all the Tinkerbell movies.
All the Tinkerbell movies, which are so much better than you could possibly think they are.
Or they have no right to be
they
so good.
They don't have any right. Fucking Tinkerbell.
Imagine and the pirate one of your fairy. Favorite.
So good.
Imagine one of your favorite Disney movies and be like, this is peak Disney.
Yeah.
Well, transfer that over to Tinkerbell.
And Tinkerbell.
They had some amazing writers on Tinkerbell movies.
The first Tinkerbell movie was all right. It was decent. I don't remember much of it. I think that's the one, the Lost.
Sure, okay.
Yeah.
Like, they that do one's start fun. Off very yeah, soft. Yeah, the
first one's like, very it's just sort of like.
Whimsical it and is. For toddlers.
The Great Fairy Rescue.
Yes, that's when it starts.
Getting good.
Getting that ramping up.
Fucking movie with Michael Sheen. That movie is so heartfelt. He plays the dad. It's so heartfelt and it's so sweet. And our little goon, our eldest goon, made us watch it 1,000 times, right? And then there's Tinkerbell and the Secret of the Wings, where you meet her sister Periwinkle. And that fucking movie.
Who can only live in like.
Yeah, like, she's a frost. Her sister Periwinkle is a frost fairy, so she lives in the winter land, and Tink lives in like you know the regular fairyland, right?
And they can't be together.
And they can't be together because
one's environment's too cold and the one's environment's too hot.
Yeah, fucking that movie.
But it's that
and that movie
seems,
has Timothy Dalton.
We're not doing any justice.
No, we're not. That movie has Timothy Dalton in it, and it is such a good fucking performance from Timothy Dalton. And it is such a beautiful movie. And every time I see Frost in the Ground, I make my heart goes, oh, right? And then there's Tinkerbell and the Pirate Fairy, which stars Tom Hiddleston as Captain Hook, and he sings. It's so good. It's so good. And then the last one was Tinkerbell and the Legend of the Never Beast, which fucking broke me. And I like ugly sobbed at. And
I've only seen that one once because it was an ugly sob
it was
kind of movie.
Maybe
like, you guys are out there with like, oh, I love all my Disney movies.
Yeah,
and
but
I
if
like
you're
all my Pixar
sleeping
movies,
on the Tinkerbell movies.
The fact that Tinkerbell movies, just because they never went to theater,
yeah.
is the only reason that they haven't
no,
been
they're
nominated.
All directed to DVD.
Yeah, but they never get their chance.
They're so.
But if they have given
good.
Their chance in the theater, they would have had their chance at.
And she's
some
a great
serious
Tinkerbell.
Awards.
She actually made me like Tinkerbell, who up until that point I was always like, Tinkerbell's a cunt.
And Tinkerbell's dumb. It's
Tinkerbell's
a dumb character.
Just a straight up cunt in
doesn't
every single version of Peter Pan. Even when she was Julia Roberts in Hook, she was a cunt.
She rescues him when he's.
Yeah, and then she like throws a fit the rest of the time. She was like, me, 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 me. No, Tinkerbell is a straight-up cunt, but in these movies, she is spectacular.
Boss.
And we will always love her. And I guess she was also in Parenthood and Good Girls, but I never watched that, so.
I really like the fact that the video game they're playing is called Ninja Revolution. I used to be a big Dance Dance Revolution player.
I'm shocked by this.
Like, I'm not just talking big. I traveled to the San Francisco...
I thought for a second you were going to be like, I traveled to the ancient lands of Japan.
Yes, to learn the ancient... Yeah, to learn the ways of Dance Dance Revolution. No, I...
Fucking nerd.
We went to San Francisco's convention center.
Yeah.
And where there was a Dance Dance Revolution competition.
Holy shit.
For a regional competition for, like, the West Coast. And
tell me you were a Christian virgin without telling me you were a Christian virgin.
And my partner and I did very well. We didn't win, but we did very well.
Because if you had a place at the Dance Dance Revolution convention, you would have never shut the fuck up about it.
You're right. Yes. I would have hung that trophy high.
Oh my God, it'd be hanging right over there underneath that picture of Loki.
Yeah. My Dance Dance Revolution trophy. Look at how amazing I am at
putting my
feet on the right squares at the right time.
Tell me you're homeschooled without telling me you're homeschooled.
Part of me also feels like George Michael just moved to Toronto and changed his name.
I'm sorry, but you cannot ever say that Michael Cera has something called range when it comes to his acting.
Not so much.
No. Like... Scott Pilgrim is the worst character I have seen in this podcast. Of all of the awful and great and in-between characters that we have seen played out, writ large on the big screen across our eyeballs for 60 episodes. 61 episodes. Mm. Scott Pilgrim is the worst fucking creature to be on our screen. And I am even putting him under those motherfuckers from Whiplash.
I was going to say, worse than Miles Teller?
Scott Pilgrim is the biggest piece of shit ever. And Michael Cera does a great job at making him wildly unlikable.
Do you think Scott Pilgrim becomes a better person by the end of this movie? Not even one?
Not even a little. I don't think he deserves his redemption.
You don't think he learns his lesson or anything?
I think that the lesson that he learns is hollow. I think that it lasts about 4 seconds. And I think that Scott Pilgrim is and continues to be a massive piece of shit. I think that ultimately he knocked up Ramona Flowers. They have a daughter together. He is not a part of that picture at all, and he is bad at sending his fucking child support. Wow, Scott Pilgrim is a piece of shit. He doesn't deserve a single iota of his redemption. Because, and I, look, about 3/4 of the way through this movie, we turned it off, and I looked at Caveman, and I went, I don't want to finish this. For the first time watching any movie for this podcast, I wanted to turn off that movie and not pick it back up again. And you were very passionate. You were like, no, he has his comeuppance. It's like Scrooge. He gets his redemption in the end. A couple days later, I watched it, and I went, no, that wasn't enough. It's a little bit, but it's not enough. He doesn't deserve Ramona, and he doesn't deserve Knives. That man deserved to end up alone and in therapy.
If he was wanting Ramona so bad, why didn't he just do the right thing?
Because he's a fucking coward and a piece of shit.
Okay, that answers that question. Go on to the next. You know they have a song that's just about a garbage truck?
Not shocking. You fucking wanna get into it so bad, I can tell. And I do too.
I think we're supposed to believe that Scott, like, he's such a good fighter. With each one of the ex-boyfriends or exes. I think he's such a good fighter because of Ninja Revolution.
Yeah, you think?
That's what we're supposed to believe, that he plays it so much with Knives that now he knows how to kick ass. Honestly, Maggie, I think that's why most guys like this movie. They just want to see each fight. It's almost the same thing that you could draw a parallel line to why people like Fight Club and The Godfather, because they like the pretty pictures, they like the cool sounds, and the men that they see on screen are something that they just see as something that's cool and want to be like.
Yeah.
And
because they are hollow and vapid and awful human beings.
I think a lot of men want to emulate these people that they see, and they're not even paying attention.
Favorite movie is Scott Pilgrim versus the World. It's a red flag.
It's not my favorite movie.
No, I'm not saying that it is. I know it's not. Honey, what's your favorite fight in Scott Pilgrim versus the World? What is your favorite ex fight in that movie?
It was an easy one with Chris Evans, because they just tell him to go skate down a flight of stairs. And he's like, are you serious? That would kill me. He's like, well, if you can't do it, you can't do it. Oh, well, I have to do it now. Like, that's exactly what I feel like the men who watch this movie are like, well, don't tell me what I can't do. I of course I can do it.
I can do anything.
I can do anything.
Ugh, and then they hurt themselves terribly, and then it's everybody else's fault. My favorite.
You looked at me weird and it made me lose my balance.
my My favorite fight is the Battle of the Bands fight with the two twins. So it's 5 and 6. It's X's 5 and 6. I like the music, which is weird because I actually don't like any of Sex Bomb's music. Mainly because Sex Bomb reminds me of too many high school bands that I knew who I was friends with. People in those awful fucking high school bands, and you would go to those awful fucking high school clubs in town, in Victorville on D Street.
They are purposely making fun of those kind of garage bands. And you would watch
these garage bands playing abject noise with absolute no musical value whatsoever. I love how the
song's really like 10 seconds long.
And you're still just like, yay, good job, woo, friends. Like, woo, I've known you since you were 4 and I've got to clap for you. This is sucks. I have
so many high school friends that were in bands.
Yes.
And I've been to so many of their little concerts. So
many of their little concerts.
And some of them are... All of them? Out of the 5 that I knew, one of them at least was fun to listen to. Like, at least fun to go to their concerts, at least, like, if...
That wasn't these the swing ones, band, was it? No, it because wasn't. They don't count, because they're actually legit musicians.
It wasn't the swing band. They weren't... I didn't know them in high school. The high school bands I knew, there was one legit one that I could say...
Do you remember what the name of them were? You don't have to say it. I just want to know later on. See, because I don't remember the names of any of the stupid-ass... I want to say it
begins with an I.
Yeah, I don't remember the name of any of the stupid-ass bands that my friends were in high school. Yeah, it was a high school band. It was not going to be fucking good. But you still sat there and let them play their musicians at you, or their instruments at you, while you're just like, ugh.
Hey, you know, you want to support your friends. Yeah. You want to support your classmates. Yeah,
you know what? That's a good thing to do. But fucking over 20 years later, you're allowed to be like, fuck, did they suck?
The amount of time that I spent in my high school and early... or late teens, early 20s, was going to friends' fucking concerts. Garage
bands, yeah.
Yeah, and they were always like, bad. Of course they were. And but that's why they always played, in, especially once I was over 21 and was invited to the garage bands that were at bars.
Mm-hmm.
It was really just about drinking the beer. Yeah. Like, I'm here just to drink. See, and
I never went to those because I was like, oh, I have to work the next day. But in reality, it was like, I will not be seen at a bar whatsoever for
we
you.
We all know
ever.
We all know these bands suck.
Yeah. We all know we all had those high school bands.
We're here to like be and there Sex for our friends. Bomb
kind of sucks. But I liked the fight with I like the dragon versus the giant yeti.
It's so hard to support your friend who's a bass player.
So true. Like, good job, buddy.
Like, I can support my guitar player, lead vocals.
Yeah, or the drums. Fucking, but yeah. Man,
when my best friend is just the bass player, it's like, I heard a few of those.
Good job.
Boom, 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 boom.
Sure, you definitely are the next Paul McCartney, said no one.
Especially when you're just playing the bass. Boom, 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 boom.
Or even worse,
string every now and then.
And this, by the way, Caveman and I have no musical talent whatsoever fucking ever, but we have an ear for music.
I at least know how to read music.
Yeah, and I was taught how to play the fucking one Beatles song, fucking a Beatles song on bass. So, but I'm not a bass player at all. Like, I am shit at music, but I can hear music very well, and I definitely know what is good and what is not. And that three-piece band of your friends and their weird boyfriend was not good.
No, not that one.
But that was my favorite fight
in
the movie, was the Battle of the Bands one. I don't know. I think that I found it the most sort of amusing and creative fight of all of them. I don't necessarily agree with the fight with Mae Whitman, because there is no way whatsoever that no matter where he touched her, that Michael Cera could ever make a lesbian come.
Oh.
It's, tell me otherwise.
No,
tell
I believe
me,
you.
Yeah. You know what line I really enjoyed in Scott Pilgrim versus the World? Because I feel like that was a line written specifically for me and no one else, was the line where Michael Cera is talking about Brie Larson and he refers to her as my stupid ex-girlfriend. And one of the characters in the back, I think it's Kieran Culkin, goes, isn't that an Uma Thurman movie? Uma Thurman was in a movie called My Super Ex-Girlfriend.
My Super, you're right.
And that...
I remember that movie.
I remember that movie, too.
Oh, my God.
Eddie Izzard's in that movie.
Oh, my God.
And so is Luke Wilson, who I always preferred as of
that
all the Wilson, of the two Wilson
Kill
brothers.
Bill, right?
Yeah. And it did not do well, and it's a terrible movie. But
it is a terrible movie.
But when
I think I only saw that once in theaters with a friend because I think
I only saw it on like
I think
Netflix.
After Kill Bill, we were like, oh, we gotta see another Uma Thurman movie,
and it was fucking that,
and it was that,
yeah, and it was not good,
no,
not good,
not good at all.
But that one line,
I remember she wore shades.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she was psychotic, and Luke Wilson was like, oh, and Eddie Izzard was like, oh, I'm Eddie Izzard, and, you know, whatever. But that one line, I swear to God, was written for me, because had we seen this movie together in theater, that would have been the line that I laughed at that nobody else laughed at. Because there have been many times in movie theaters where I have laughed at a joke, at a reference that I understand that other people don't, so I'm the only person in the theater, literally a silent theater, and you hear in my background, ha 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 ha, that's me.
Yeah.
That is that line for this movie, is the Uma Thurman super ex-girlfriend reference.
So random.
I know, but so Maggie.
And yes, Chris Evans was Captain America First Avenger 1 year after this movie came out.
Yep.
And was mainly known for Not Another Teen Movie and as
Fantastic
Johnny
Four.
Storm.
Yeah.
Before this one, so
I wonder how Joseph Quinn's gonna do as Johnny Storm.
You know, I have high hopes.
I have really high hopes for that movie.
I have high hopes because if it doesn't make it,
oh God,
that's the end of the MCU.
It really will be. Because they can't come back from fucking up the Fantastic Four.
They have to nail that.
But how do they not?
And they're already working on future movies. So.
Yeah, we've already, you know, the cast of fucking Doomsday.
Like, if those movies leading up to Doomsday, and especially Doomsday.
Do you think the Thunderbolts is going
to
do well?
They all need to do really well.
Do you think the Thunderbolts is going to do well, though? Because I'm a little worried about Thunderbolts.
I am worried about it, but I want it to be fun.
I want Thunderbolts to be one of those word-of-mouth films where you're like, no, I swear to God, you don't need to know anything about the MCU. Go see Thunderbolts. Because I'm so worried for my boy Bucky.
I just want it to be fun.
I know, I do too.
What's wrong with the movie?
But like,
just being
we love Captain America. Well, I love Captain America 4. You kind of didn't. And that was a very decisive movie. People have been really like,
oh,
one way or the other on Captain America 4.
Four.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. But like, I swear to God, if Thunderbolts doesn't do well, I don't know what the MCU is going to do. Because they are.
It's coming to the end,
I mean,
possibly.
Like, yeah, well, I mean, they're so desperate. Really? They had to get RDJ back. Like, it's worrisome. And the fucking Russo brothers, who've also not done well outside of the MCU.
So, Maggie.
Yes.
I am rating this movie 3 stars. What would you rate Scott Pilgrim versus the World?
Purely for the artistic talent that went into making it in terms of directing, cinematography, and special effects, I will give it a 2.5. The story does nothing for me. I find this movie to be sexist, racist, and lazy. And we'll just leave it at that. I don't think I need to really continue on. This is not a film. This wasn't a film for me in 2010. You know why? Because I gave birth in 2010. I became a mother in 2010. And so I was already aged out of the prime audience of this film.
This was also 2010 has come up a lot. We've had a lot of movies on this list that came out in 2010. 2010 movies was the first time where the Academy had
stretched
10
out
movies
to 10, yeah.
For the 2011 Academy Awards. Visual effects, the nominees for visual effects were Alice in Wonderland, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1, Hereafter, which I'm not familiar with, Iron Man 2, and Inception, and of course Inception 1.
Yeah, well, because fucking how does Inception not win?
Honestly, I would have traded out Iron Man 2 or Alice in Wonderland for Scott Pilgrim.
I would have.
Not that it would have won, because Inception definitely deserved the win on that, but of all Academy Award nominations, I feel like visual effects were the only...
Iron Man 2 was only cool for that sequence where he puts the suitcase becomes the suit.
Yeah, there's some good moments in that.
But Scott Pilgrim's the better movie, you know, in terms of special effects.
The final act in Iron Man 2 with all the robots fighting. You know, it's all very spectacular and everything. But I really feel like Scott Pilgrim did something different, something very interesting with the film to make it...
No, again, the special effects in this movie are incredible.
Especially the budget was good. You know, the budget that they were going by compared to Iron Man 2 and Alice in Wonderland was microscopic.
Yeah.
And I think they did a better job and would have loved to have seen them at least on the nomination list. Sound as well. I think the sound in,
you know, what, all like Scott the coin Pilgrim, noises and everything.
Everything.
And
everything. Yeah. And, and, you know, there was
Bill Hader.
Once again, Inception just stole everything for
sound.
I mean, you had Toy Story 3 and Tron Legacy.
Tron Legacy.
True Grit. Salt, The Social Network. King's Speech. Unstoppable. So a lot of nominees that year, but nothing for Scott Pilgrim. And I know it has not aged well at all. There are certain elements of the movie that are still a lot of fun for me to watch, but it's not one of those movies that I'm just dying to put on to watch again. Unfortunately, it used to be.
You know what? If you still like this movie because it's shiny, happy, pretty, and you like the story even a little bit, and you maybe, say, connect to a nostalgic version of yourself who saw this movie back in 2010 as a young human being and thought, oh, okay, maybe, you know, like, maybe that's what it'll look like, blah, 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 whatever. Great. If this is a movie that you like, by all means, fantastic. Go forth and like it. But from the beginning, this was never a movie that I really particularly cared for. And watching it the other night, it was definitely not a movie that I care for. You know, when I disagree with the general consensus about these films, I'm not doing it just for funsies. Art is subjective. And subjectively, I do not enjoy this film for the story or the characters. But it is shiny, happy, pretty, and I can understand why it's on this list.
So, Maggie.
Yes, caveman.
I have two questions for you.
Hit it.
Somos nosotros ahora. Haremos el cambio que el mundo espera. Mejora la vida de los demás. Emprende ayudando a emprender. Cumple sus sueños, que ellos te ayuden a cumplir los tuyos.
Oh, yeah, I remember those ads. Oh, God, I love it when he speaks Spanish. I love him so much.
I figured you'd like it when I speak Spanish.
Thank you for that. I needed that after this episode because, folks, this might be the first episode that really caused a major division in the Movie Mingle household, and you'll hear none of that.
Would the presence of Oscar Isaac have made...
Such a son of a bitch. Would it have made Scott Pilgrim better? I don't know. I'm going to say yes, just because... No, you know what? No, because staring at this pretty cast still didn't make me like these characters anymore, because you can't take a beautiful person and give him a shitty character. And, I mean, you know, what is that old saying that you can't make shit shine? Can't shine a shit?
Sure.
Yeah. And although I'm pretty sure the Mythbusters folks proved us wrong, because I'm pretty sure they took a shit and they made it shiny.
Yeah. It's just like cow...
Yeah, manure. Like cow dung, yeah, and they made it shiny. Yeah. With a lot of grit and sandpaper and polishing, but I still contend that you could not make these shitty characters better by making them pretty, hence Brie Larson and Chris Evans and the guy who played Robbie from New Girl.
Or
Brandon Routh or Audrey Plaza. So
there's a lot of pretty people in this movie.
A lot of pretty people in this movie, and they all fucking suck. So no, this movie would not have been better with Oscar Isaac in it.
Well, second question, character would you have had Oscar Isaac play?
Gideon? Just because I don't buy Jason Schwartzman as a swarvy, romantic bad guy.
Okay.
I just don't see it, because he's always just sort of like the Jason Schwartzman character. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I see him with a stupid mustache in a Wes Anderson movie. I don't see him as the ultimate bad guy.
Which is why I really like his character in Queer, because he doesn't look like Jason Schwartzman. He doesn't act like Jason Schwartzman. And it's a very different type of acting than I usually get from him when I see him in, you know, usually a Wes Anderson film or something like this. So,
yeah, I would have made him, like, it would make more sense that Ramona could not handle herself around Oscar Isaac than it does around Jason Schwartzman. So at least I would have that to look forward to, but I would not like this movie anymore. And that has been this week's episode of Movie Mingle, and we hope you enjoyed it, honestly, a lot more than we enjoyed bringing it to you, because behind the scenes here at Movie Mingle, this movie was a rough one, but we got through it in the end. Next week, we have Kill Bill, which I'm actually quite excited to rewatch, because it's been a very long time, and very soon, we will be dropping our April bonus episode on one of Caveman's favorites, The Iron Giant. And do look forward to that, because it's a very fun conversation. As ever, you can find us on Instagram, Threads, and Letterboxd at Movie Mingle Pod. You can find us on YouTube at Movie Mingle Podcast. And if you have any questions, comments, thoughts, or concerns, especially about this one, you can write us at MovieMinglePod@gmail.com. You can find the email address in the description of this episode for ease. And you can write us and send us whatever you have to feel about that. And we appreciate hearing from you. So we look forward to you joining us next week on Movie Mingle as we barrel down the end of this podcast. And as ever, please take care of yourselves. Please take care of each other. And remember, your own self-worth is worth more than what your exes think of you. And go mingle. Okay, bye!
Are you an effective team?
We are an effective team.
Let them fight.
How did you just do that?
I'm a really good lawyer.
Here on Caladan, we've ruled by air power and sea power. On Arrakis, we need to cultivate desert power.
Welcome, Mr. Beach. What's that bar?
I'm a little confused.
Oh, we wouldn't want that, would we?
I don't want to brag, but I will. I was in the Avengers.
The Avengers?
Yeah.
That's great. Thank you. What is that?
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Toga. 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 Toga.